We're on to the Kraken Part 2. Some of the earliest mentions of the Kraken come from Greece and Scandinavia. The Norse saga of Ovar Oder, pronunciation courtesy of Google Translate, as pronounced in Icelandic, Orvar Odas, and in Norwegian, Orvar Odur, is one of the earliest references to the Kraken. Come with us into the past to around the 13th or 14th century when the Hrnaldar Saga, which is a story history, in later years thought to be more story than history given the content, was written by an anonymous author, most likely in Iceland. We're focusing on one particular Norse saga, the Saga of Ovar Oder, which means arrow odd or arrow's point, which may seem a little weird, but it is the nickname of the hero in this saga. You'll see why he got the nickname in just another minute. So what do you do for an encore when there were sagas written about both your dad and your grandfather? No pressure, right? Oder began life with an early prediction by a seer that his own horse, Faxi, would kill him. Instead, he killed his horse and left and never planned to return home because that was where it had been predicted he would die. Magical arrows, Gusís Natar in hand, a gift from his father, heading to Finnmark, Constantinople, and other places. He did well against more than one Viking, made a friend of a Swedish champion, Hjalmar, and they swore into a brotherhood. Orvar Oder continued his travels south as far as the Mediterranean and the Holy Land. This information was from Wikipedia, and the following is a direct quote from there. Quote, while seeking vengeance against Ogwan Tussak for the murder of his blood brother, Thord, Oder is accompanied by his giant son, Vignir. During their voyage, they encounter two large sea creatures, as described by Vignir. These were two sea monsters, one called Sea Reek, and the other, Heatherback. The Sea Reek is the biggest monster in the whole ocean. It swallows men and ships and whales, too. And anything else around. It stays underwater for days, then it puts up its mouth and nostrils, and when it does, it never stays on the surface for less than one tide. These creatures, later described in an old Norwegian scientific work, Konungskuggsjá, were to come to be understood as what the Norse regarded as the Kraken. This was from circa 1250. This is seemingly one of the first references to the Kraken, unquote.
So what happened to Oder? He married a princess and became the king of Bjalkaland, which was known as Pelt Country. For coats? Maybe?
Yeah, maybe.
And at last he got homesick. After arriving home, he joked about the prophecy and tripped over his poor horse, Faxi's skull, disturbing a snake that promptly bit him. And that was it. He died. What do you do when you encounter a creature that can swallow your ship? Set sail? Panic?
Yeah, I don't know. Run for it.
Welcome to the Spooky Art Tales from the Whispering Gallery with Emily and Suzanne. We're glad you're here with us as we take our second voyage under the sea and into the art of now and art history as we search for the fabled Kraken. We loved the folktale in the opening segment about the Sea Reek and Heatherback sea monsters. There are some incredible stories in this episode that date back to the Greek elders, so the ripple from these old naturalist recordings and folktales is pretty neat. Thanks for being a part of our art community. Let's get started.
I feel a quick apology is in order for the jumble of stories with more than one mixed up reference in episode 1 of The Kraken. We were completely geeking out about the amazing creatures that really exist, squid, cuttlefish, and octopus.
During the next couple of episodes, we hope to provide more references and clarify some of the stories and information that we've already shared and learn more about the illustrations and art and some of the incredible stories that the art was based on. So now back to the story of the Kraken and the art that's related.
First, we wanted to do a quick summary of what you'd be seeing on Instagram, and hopefully you're following us on there. From the very beginning, you'll have seen the colossal octopus, a pen and wash illustration by Pierre Denis de Montfort, a French naturalist, shows a giant octopus taking down a ship. The next shows the fish catalog, Mosaic Man 120177, done in tesserae, which is a mosaic of fish. This was found in Pompeii at the House of Geometric Mosaics. The piece is dated back to circa 100 BC. It shows a lot of marine life, as we discussed, and there's a octopus wrestling a lobster. Turns out octopus do eat lobster. The next one was of Aristotle when he talks about Teuthos, the giant squid, in his History of Animals. It shows a bust of Aristotle. The next shows a mural. On one side of the mural is a large out-of-water octopus as part of the terror ride at the Lagoon Amusement Park in Farmington, Utah. This wide-eyed out-of-water octopus is part of a mural created by Bill Tracy, who lived from 1916 to 74. And it's part of the terror ride. You see it when you're waiting in line at Lagoon Amusement Park in Farmington, Utah. It's also been called Monsters Playing Baseball by some fans, which is kind of funny.
No, it's cute, though. It's like it really exciting that there's something, I don't know, octopus-related on one of my favorite rides.
Yeah, it's kind of cute once you see it, because there's a gorilla with a club, and there's some skulls around him that could be the baseballs, and then there's a dragon holding, you know, maybe it's his claws, but it just kind of looks like he could be holding a catcher's mitt. It's kind of cute. Next, we share with you a link to 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea by Jules Verne on Kindle that we saw on Amazon at that time for free. We shared that with you along with a couple of pictures, along with the cover to the book and a picture of an octopus coming up under the submarine. Then we share a picture of a squid holding a sailor, an illustration by Alphonse de Neuville and Edouard Riot. This image was originally featured in the Hetzel edition of 20,000 Lieues Sous les Mers and has also been featured in more recent editions. This was shared via the Wikimedia Commons. Then we give up and have some fun. We share the most adorable kraken by Baraka Schroff. It's just called the Kraken. It looks like a little baby octopus because there's, if you're looking at the sizes of the coins, surrounded on the bottom of the ocean, and then there's a little toy ship is what it looks like, but you never know. Maybe it's a baby octopus. He's got his tongue hanging out, and he's super adorable, and he's ready to pounce on the ship. Last of all, we change from 2D to a sculpture by chainsaw artist Jeffrey Michael Samadowski. You'll find him at JMS_wood_sculpture. On Instagram. He carved a beautiful giant Pacific octopus out of a fallen redwood tree, and it's 3,500 pounds, but it's just a beautiful work. We shared that as well. So we've got digital art, traditional pen and ink. We're trying to give you guys a diverse showing of art on Instagram. Besides these hardcore stories of cephalopods and mollusks and all this science, the art that is related, and you'll have seen a lot of other CGI, like from Disney's Pirates of the Caribbean, Clash of the Titans, when was it Zeus that says release the Kraken? I didn't see the most recent one.
I don't think I did either. I was like, don't try to replace my claymation. Get out of here.
Yeah, exactly. Ray Harryhausen.
Mm-hmm. GreekMythology.com shares that it was first mentioned in an old Icelandic saga called Ovar Odr, which was written in the 13th century AD. As the main characters of the saga sailed across the Sea of Greenland, they encountered two monsters, the Lingbakr and the Hafgufa. The Hafgufa is linked to the Kraken. Hafgufa, which is Icelandic, half meaning sea and gufa meaning steam, is the name of a massive sea monster reported in the Ovar-Odr saga to have existed in the Greenland Sea, which was said to disguise itself as an island or pair of rocks rising from the sea. And again, that's just from Wikipedia.
The Ovar-Odr saga is equal to Eru-Odr saga. That's his nickname, Eru-Odr. Eru-Odr's saga. Sounds a little weird coming off Utah accent Americans, but that's kind of how it's rolling. The Lingbakr, which is Icelandic, Lingi is heather, plus bak, back, is the name of a massive whale-like sea monster reported in the Ovar-Odr saga to have existed in the Greenland Sea. According to the saga, Lingbakr would bait seafarers by posing as a heather-covered island. And when a crew landed on his back, he sank into the sea, drowning the crew. That was just a quote from Wikipedia. Yeah.
These were two sea monsters, one called Sea Reek and the other Heatherback. The Sea Reek is the biggest monster in the whole ocean. It swallows men and ships and whales too, and anything else around. It stays underwater for days, then it puts up its mouth and nostrils, and when it's done, it never stays on the surface for less than one tide. These creatures, later described in an old Norwegian scientific work, Konungis Skutskia, I'm so sorry for the pronunciation, it's a work in progress, man. So that's circa 1250, were to come to be understood as what the Norse regarded as the Kraken. This is seemingly one of the first references to the Kraken, and that's from Wikipedia. Ancient origins also shared the following. The Swedish author Jacob Wallenberg described the Kraken in the 1781 work Min son på galeon, My Son on the Galley, as follows. Gradually, Kraken ascends to the surface, and when he is at 10 to 12 fathoms, the boats had better move out of his vicinity, as he will shortly thereafter burst up like a floating island, spurting water from his dreadful nostrils and making ring waves around him, which can reach many miles. Could one doubt that this is the Leviathan of Job?
Yeah, that would be scary. And they have the whirlpools up in Scandinavia. You know what they're called? Have you seen them?
I haven't.
Oh, dude. Okay. Moskin Straumen is a system of tidal eddies and whirlpools, one of the strongest in the world.
Oh, wow.
Did you just Google it?
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, there are some really cool pictures. I think they're maelstroms. And these whirlpools would pop up, and I mean, I could see, like, what in the world is creating these whirlpools, you know? That would add to trying to explain stuff happening in nature.
For sure. Those are intense.
There's a picture from NASA of a green whirlpool. There's, looks like, from a satellite. They're just really interesting, so maybe we'll post a picture of one of these whirlpools.
Yeah. Because
they're just really cool. So this is a direct quote. Wikipedia Kraken. The Kraken is a legendary cephalopod-like sea monster of giant size in Scandinavian folklore. According to the Norse sagas, the Kraken dwells off the coasts of Norway and Greenland and terrorizes nearby sailors. Authors over the years have postulated that the legend may have originated from sightings of giant squids that may grow to 13 to 15 meters, 40 to 50 feet in length. The sheer size and fearsome appearance attributed to the Kraken have made it a common ocean-dwelling monster in various fictional works. The Kraken has been the focus of many superstitious sailors passing the North Atlantic, and especially sailors from the Nordic countries due to their proximity and its Scandinavian origin. Throughout the centuries, the Kraken has been a staple part of sailors' superstitions and mythos, being heavily linked to sailors' ability of telling a tall tale. So, okay, how many tickles does it take to make an octopus laugh?
I don't know, Mom, how many?
Tentacles! So, okay, this is just such serious stuff.
Mom's big on jokes, too, so this is totally, totally typical stuff. If the Kraken is a squid or octopus, we'd want to know what a mollusk is, right? The University of California, Berkeley Museum of Paleontology states,
Lophotrochoza, the mollusca, includes sea slugs, squids, snails, and scallops, cuttlefish, octopus. Possibly our friends from this episode being the kraken, and in the family of the cephalopod.
Introduction. Mollusca is one of the most diverse groups of animals on the planet, with at least 50,000 living species, and more likely around 200,000. It includes such familiar organisms as snails, octopi, octopuses, squid, clams, scallops, oysters, and chitons. I haven't heard of that. What is that?
Cheetos? I don't know. Just kidding.
Yeah, really.
Chitons. Let's see. Chitons are a small class of marine mollusks characterized by 8 overlapping dorsal shell plates or valves that are held by a leathery girdle. In some species, though, the valves have become reduced and can appear to be embedded in the fleshy girdle.
This is from Marine Ecology 2007, University of Washington, Tacoma.
They kind of look like potato bugs, or like the trilobites, the beetle-y.
Oh, yeah, they totally do.
That's spelled C-H-I-T-O-N-S if you want to look it up on Google Images and see. They're kind of interesting. They're cool little animals.
Mollusca also includes some lesser-known groups, like the monoplacophorans, a group once thought to be extinct for millions of years until one was found in 1952 in the deep ocean off the coast of Costa Rica. Mollusks are a clade of organisms that have all soft bodies, which typically have a head and a foot region. Often their bodies are covered by a hard exoskeleton, as in the shells of snails and clams or the plates of chitons. A part of almost every ecosystem in the world, mollusks are extremely important members of many ecological communities. They range in distribution from terrestrial mountaintops to the hot vents and cold seeps of the deep sea, and range in size from 20-meter-long giant squids to microscopic aplacophorans, a millimeter or less in length, that live between sand grains.
Wow.
The shells of some mollusks are considered quite beautiful and valuable. Mollusks can also be nuisances, such as the common garden snail. And mollusks... Mom, you're testing me.
Sorry.
Well, I guess the University of Berkeley is testing me.
Yes.
Mollusks make up a major component of fouling communities both on docks and on the hulls of ships. One of the largest of all mollusks, the giant squid, Architeuthis, they also have a very long and rich fossil record going back more than 550 million years, making them one of the most common types of organisms used by paleontologists to study the history of life. And again, that came from the University of California, Berkeley.
Did you guys learn about the golden ratio or golden mean?
Yeah.
Okay. We learned about this in one of my first design classes for my degree. As artists, designers, and mathematicians, you may have learned about the Fibonacci sequence. My design teacher showed it to us via a video so we could see the spiral. They showed a nautilus shell and how it was divided up into perfect chambers that got smaller, or whichever direction you want to go, got bigger. So you may have heard about it as the Fibonacci sequence, the golden ratio, or golden mean. The nautilus is a cephalopod, referenced with its seemingly perfectly divided chambers. After some research, I found that it's not often a perfect match for the math, and thus doesn't really match the golden mean or the reference rectangle. A quick, what is it? The golden ratio. We found some information on the creativeblock.com, and there's a common mathematical ratio found in nature that can be used to create pleasing, natural-looking compositions in your design work. We call it the golden ratio. Although it's also known as the golden mean, the golden section, or the Greek letter pi, whether you're an illustrator, art director, or graphic designer, it's well worth considering the golden ratio on any project. Closely related to the Fibonacci sequence, which you may remember from either your school maths lessons or Dan Brown's The Da Vinci Code, the golden ratio describes the perfectly symmetrical relationship between two proportions. And that was a direct quote, again, from the creativeblock.com. And the next area is an answer that was written to the question, why is the Fibonacci sequence so important, which was listed on Quora and answered by Danny Kotacek, BA in Mathematics, University of Cambridge. He answered this on January 16th of 2018. In answer to why is the Fibonacci sequence so important, Danny says, leaving aside its historical importance, the main reason the Fibonacci sequence is important is that it is the closest approximation in integers to the logarithmic spiral series, which follows the same rule as the Fibonacci sequence. Each number is the sum of the previous two, but also the ratio of successive terms is the same. We are generally interested in geometric series like 1, 2, 4, 8, and so on, because they appear a lot in nature. When we're looking at things that grow or diminish over time, lots of other things have that kind of relationship, like interest rates, half-lives of radiation, and so on. Then to continue in another area of his answer, because of this relationship, the Fibonacci numbers appear in nature a lot because they provide an alternative, easy way for organisms to grow, not by repeated doubling, but by repeated adding in a spiral.
NOAA's National Ocean Service, the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration in the U.S., shares that the Nautilus is a mollusk that uses jet propulsion to roam the ocean deep. Writers, artists, and engineers have long marveled at the Nautilus's beauty and swimming abilities. The chambered or pearly Nautilus is a cephalopod, a type of mollusk, and is a distant cousin to squid, octopi, and cuttlefish.
So we've kind of gone off down another rabbit hole with the Nautilus and mollusks, the Fibonacci sequence. It all kind of relates as far as in us trying to talk about the Kraken and these cephalopods with an idea of art and design and what we've learned. What did the octopus use to make jelly?
What did they use?
Ocean currents!
Good one. So here's another of the earliest references we could find on the Kraken. Another of the earliest references to the Kraken is from Pliny the Elder, who lived from 23 to 79 AD, in his natural history book from chapter 26, Voyages to India. So they came next to the promontory of Carmania, from which the distance across to the opposite coast, where the Mysia, a nation of Arabia, dwell, is 50 miles, and then to three islands, of which that of Oricla is alone inhabited. Being the only one supplied with fresh water, it is distant from the mainland 25 miles, quite in the Gulf, and facing Persia, there are four other islands. About these islands, sea serpents were seen swimming towards them, 20 cubits in length, which struck the fleet with great alarm.
I can only imagine if you see something like that.
For real, that would be terrifying. Just referencing that last bit, the story of Pontopidion's Kraken, or Corvin, the serpent of the Norwegian seas, is as old as Pliny, we find, and he derived his information from older works. Pliny the Elder, The Natural History by John Bostock, M.D., F.R.S., H.T., Briley, Esquire, B.A., E.D.
That was direct from him, and that was from Tufts EDU. It does appear that there's a blending of information between the cryptozoological kraken and creatures that actually do exist in our oceans. From the illustrations by French artists in Jules Verne, Famé-Louis Soulet-Mer, a.k.a. Jules Verne, 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea, to the 13th or 14th century Hornalder Chagas, and the Saga of Orvar Oder. Just a note, in the reading from Jules Verne, 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea from the first episode, there were
two readings.
I just kind of ran them together, so sorry about that. And then one point of clarification comes from The Kraken and the Colossal Octopus by Bernard, a section on giant polyps of antiquity, reprint from the publisher Routledge in 2015 in episode 1 of The Kraken. I suggested looking up the story of how the octopus got over the fence and climbed trees, that there were stories about this out on Google. Well, here it is first in Huivelman's writings, and guess who out of anybody in the whole world he's quoting but Pliny the Elder from 23 to 79 AD. And I'm saying there's stories on the internet, so I really apologize. This was on the internet, but this came courtesy of Google Books. And so here we go with a quote from that book.
So Pliny the Elder, sometimes called the Naturalist, although he aimed more at offering a synthesis of the knowledge of his time than at recording his observations of nature, was not quite as particular about the quality of his information. On the topic of giant cephalopods, the Roman encyclopedist quotes General Lucius Lucilius, whose memoirs had been published by Tribus Niger, one of his lieutenants in the Kingdom of Granada. As Pliny had himself been colonel of the cavalry under Tiberius, he could hardly be suspicious of the military nor doubt their judgment. Trebius related that in Cartia, in the Botica, an octopus, Polypus, crawled each night out of the sea to eat up fish from the salting vats. To end this larceny, a tall palisade had been erected around the brine vats. In vain, however, for the octopus, climbing a nearby tree, managed to cross the obstacle. One night, however, the dogs heard it and alerted the fishermen by their barking. It was then discovered that the beast was of a monstrous size and had managed to hold the dogs at bay by its terrible smell. It would also whip themselves with its tentacles or hammer them with its more robust arms. It could only be overwhelmed after it had been pierced by numerous tridents. To establish the authenticity of what Pliny rightly calls a prodigy, the animal was carved up and brought in pieces to the highest authority of the territory, the proconsul of Botica. Its head was shown to Lucilius. It was the size of a barrel and of the capacity of 15 amphorae, around 400 liters. Its barbs, i.e. arms or tentacles, were also presented to him. Their size was such that a man could hardly embrace them, as knotty as clubs, and 30 feet long, about 10 meters. The cavities with which they were covered looked like basins and could hold the volume of an urn. Its teeth were of a size commensurate to that of the animal. The rest of the beast, weighing over 300 kilograms, was conserved as a marvelous specimen. This information is undoubtedly based on real events. Otherwise, Trebius would not have had the gall in his relation to quote his own direct superior, General Lucilius.
That came from The Kraken and the Colossal Octopus by Bernard as a direct quote. So there are indeed stories of them getting around. One thing I learned about in college English was to look at who the author of a piece was. It turns out that Bernard Huivelmans is one of the founders of cryptozoology, which is kind of a weird synchronicity since we're looking at a cryptozoological creature in the Kraken. He's quoted as saying that he should, quote, give a name to the totally new discipline in zoology that my research implied. That is how I coined the word cryptozoology, the science of hidden animals, unquote. This information about Bernard Huivelmans was on Wikipedia.
As kind of a closing note, we just wanted to mention some movies that you can watch about cephalopods or the Kraken. So like we mentioned earlier, Pirates of the Caribbean mentions the Kraken in the third movie, and also Clash of the Titans, where they mention Release the Kraken. And like Mom said earlier, it's kind of this beast man that's kind of reminiscent of Godzilla.
Well, Clash of the Titans was released with special effects and stop motion animation by Ray Harryhausen in 1981, and then again re-released more recently with Liam Neeson. Wasn't he playing Zeus? I didn't ever go see the movie. Kraken in the 1981 Clash of the Titans was a man-beast kind of thing, as far as with a torso and multiple arms and a tail of a fish of some sort. We have more octopus and cephalopod films we'll mention in episode 3. But it seems like, for the most part, the Kraken has been, as far as folklore and kind of world history, been more of a cephalopod creature, I think, with tentacles. And from your research on Africa, we've talked about the giant squid being in the northern hemisphere, as far as up in Scandinavia, off the coast of Japan, and the colossal squid being down in the Antarctic Ocean by the southern pole. And one of the other octopus we mentioned was the giant Pacific octopus. We've talked about these creatures being all over the world. So there's probably other of the species that haven't been recorded or that we haven't mentioned by any means.
Well, art friends, whew, we made it to shore. Thanks for listening as we continued to unpack the incredible, unnerving stories surrounding the legend of the Kraken. We've talked about book illustrations, engravings, wood sculpture, and we're still looking for more to share. The whirlpools, heatherback sea monsters taking people to their doom, Scandinavian heroes and Greek elders, this has been a fascinating swim in the ocean of history. To wrap things up, we'd just like to remind you to please follow us on Instagram to get the full picture, so to speak, on each episode. You'll see the art we're talking about. You can find us under the Whispering Gallery Podcast. Please send us any ideas you have or spooky art stories to share with our community of listeners. We love to hear from you. DM us on Instagram or email whisperingcontact@gmail.com. One last thing. If you have the time, we'd appreciate it if you would please rate the podcast, so it will help others decide if they want to listen. Just the star rating, I think, will help, not a big review or anything. And subscribe so you don't miss an episode. Thanks for listening and being here with us. Are you still there? I thought I would add a final bit on the fish catalog mosaic, Man 120177, as I wrote a description for my art history class. If you're having trouble sleeping, this might do the trick. So here we go, the fish catalog description. The fish catalog mosaic, Man 120177, measures width 88 centimeters, height 88 centimeters, and was found in Pompeii, Rome, dated circa 100 BCE. The eruption of Mount Vesuvius was dated 79 CE. The mosaic is now in Naples at the National Archaeological Museum, inventory number 120177. The mosaic was created from tesserae by an unknown artist. Tesserae are individual tiles or small stones and glass that are shaped like cubes and used to make up a mosaic. This mosaic of marine life was discovered in Pompeii in the Triclinium, House 8, 2, 16. Excuse the pronunciation, Casa de Mosaici Geometrici, a.k.a. House of the Geometric Mosaics, Atrium. The mosaic, as part of the triclinium, would have been part of the dining room furniture for the home. The word triclinium uses the root tri to indicate three, while klein indicates the couch-like lounges. Three lounges surrounded a small table, making up the dining area. People of that time period believed it was good for digestion to eat while reclining. The mosaic shows us the natural underwater view of a dark ocean, which may indicate the scene is at night or perhaps deep water. The rocks at the bottom of the scene give us a clear indication of where the bottom of the scene is. There are 23 sea creatures, 17 fish, 2 lobsters, 1 shark, 1 eel, 1 seashell, 1 sea urchin, 1 squid, and 1 bird, a kingfisher, making 24 creatures in all. In the center of the mosaic, there is an epic wrestling match underway between a hungry octopus and a lobster. The narrative is one of a busy, well-trafficked area for marine life, with a kingfisher bird watching from above the water, standing on a rocky shore. The bird is much smaller than the fish. Most of the fish are coming and going, but about 4 of the fish and an eel appear to be watching the battle. One fish at the bottom of the screen appears to be particularly shocked about what is going on. In researching the diet of octopus, it is clear that they do eat lobster. The octopus is represented with all 8 tentacles, 5 of which are securing the lobster. Note, there is one thing to be aware of with this mosaic. There is a mosaic very much like it that was found in the Casa del Fano, but it has a border around the scene of blue water, with a horizon line, a rocky seashore, and a pale, partly cloudy sky. Some of the fish appear to be in the air above the water. The ocean is given about 1/3 of the composition, with 2/3 allowed for the sky. Some of the fish are different than the fish catalog, but it seems to be in a similar style. It could be possible that it was created by the same artist, a student of the original artist, or from the artist's studio. If you'd like to see what the fish catalog mosaic looks like, please visit the Whispering Gallery on Instagram. Thanks for sticking around. We'll see you next time. Take care.